Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is journalist and writer Luke O'Neill, and we're going to be talking about his book, a collection of his pieces called Welcome to Hell World, Dispatches from the American Dystopia. Luke, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Well, thank you for having me, and thanks for taking the time to read it.
You have a great blurb from Tucker Carlson, and as I mentioned to you off mic, is my goal to live a life that I will get that kind of a review as a new low from the left by Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, well, I certainly earned that one. I wrote something in the Boston Globe that kind of made the rounds of conservative media that they weren't too happy with me. And
well, can we just mention what that is? Because I think that was hilarious that everybody got their panties in a bunch because of that.
Well, I guess it was about in March, and Kirstjen Nielsen, the former Department of Homeland Security secretary, was stepping down, and I'd written about her a few times, and what's going on at the border, and the unconscionable way that we're treating migrants now, and I told a story in the Globe about, I used to be a waiter for much of my life, and I waited on Bill Kristol once, and I always regretted seasoning his food in an inappropriate way when I was waiting on him. So I sort of, half jokingly, encouraged people to treat Kirstjen Nielsen and people like her in the way that I never did to Kristol.
Now that seems to me satirical and funny.
Yeah, well, it was intended to be. I mean, I do really despise
right.
Obviously, I wasn't actually encouraging people to go out and doctor, the dishes that they're serving. But it was it wasn't taken in a good faith way, and there was outrage all over the right wing media. And it's interesting, just as we're seeing this thing that's happening today with this video that's come out of Trump, murdering all these people with CNN logos and shooting them in the head and things like that. The response from the right so far has been like, well, it's just a joke. It's just a meme. You're taking it too seriously. But I was, I just happened to be thinking I wasn't given that same benefit of the doubt when it was the other way around a few months ago.
Yeah, it's like, and when somebody from the left is doing something like that, it's amazing how sensitive everybody on the right becomes.
Yeah, for sure. None of the discourse we're having now is happening in good faith, and we all
Yeah. Now let's talk about the sources of these pieces. I mean, this is a large book, and I don't know. I didn't count the essays, but there's a ton of them. And I want to encourage people not to read the book the way I did. I read the book cover to cover. Actually, and I'm going to confess something to you, Luke. When I realized that this is not the way to do this book, I actually then started it at the end and started to work my way towards the middle and then would pick random places and then read in other directions, because these essays really deserve to be read and then sort of thought about. Where did they originally come from?
Well, about a year ago, I started a newsletter. It's called Welcome to Hell World. And, it comes up two or three times a week. And I slowly started to build a following. And it started to catch on and became, somewhat of a modest-sized hit. And, a publisher in New York, OR Books, they loved it. And they told me that they asked me if they could turn it into a book. And I thought that was great because, the worst part about writing a book is that you have to actually write it. And here I was, having already basically written it.
That's the way to write a book. Having
right,
already written it.
Yeah, it doesn't usually work that way in the publishing business. Something about the essays really seemed to resonate with people. And I think that part of it was, one of the things we're seeing now is, particularly in the Trump era, is that the media doesn't really seem to be equipped to handle the things that we're seeing in the proper way. The legacy media is still sort of holding on to the traditions of the past of, objectivity and hearing both sides and things like that. And they're up against something in the Trumpists and you know, the right wing in general are no longer playing by the rules, you know. So it's like trying to play a basketball game where one team is still, you know, playing by the rules and the other team is just like punting the ball into the stands and, you know, taking their clothes off and running around back and forth and screaming. You know, it's just like you can't play a game that way.
So it seems, and see if you agree, Luke, it seems that in media that the ability to actually sound outraged has now been squelched.
I totally agree. And I think that's, if anything, you know, I certainly didn't invent the concept of being angry at what's happening in the world, but I do have, you know, a lengthy background as a traditional mainstream journalist, and I just decided that I don't want to do things that way anymore. I explain this in the book, but, you know, I don't want to hear the other side. You know, when you're writing about something terrible that's happened to somebody, you're supposed to then go and get comment from the people who have ruined their lives. You know, there's some healthcare nightmare or you know, the police have shot somebody for nothing. You're supposed to, you know, include a paragraph that explains, that sort of hedges things. Like, well, here's why it might have happened. But no, I don't. I refuse that framing anymore. I don't want to hear from the people that are ruining our lives anymore. I want to hear from the people whose lives are being ruined, and I want to, you know, give them a voice, and I want to shout about how insane it is.
Yeah, there's a great quote in the beginning of the book that you write. It's sick about having to ask permission to write stories that interested me.
Right.
And that's the other thing. The topic of your stories, and every essay is different and approaches things differently. There's a unique way that you write, at least, and I'm going to express this as a reader. It often sounds like you just come across something, and then my favorite essays of yours, you sort of relate it to other things, and then there's the main body of what the essay is about. And so there's a casualness about the essays, but I get the feeling it's a real studied and practiced casualness. Or is that actually the way that you work? You just sort of are going about your day, and there's something that you bump into, and that's what I'm going to write about.
Well, no, there's a certain, it's a mix of both. You know, I do sort of sit down and go off the cuff. But, you know, I go back and there's editing involved, and, you know, clearly I'm trying to think about, you know, weaving a larger theme through it. But a lot of it, the writing style certainly is stream of consciousness, and as you probably noticed, and maybe this is hard to deal with, there's very few comments.
Well, I was going to ask you, because for a minute there, it started to seem like Don Marquis and Archie the Cockroach at times. There was punctuation missing. And I would have to read it out loud in my head, which I thought was hilarious, that I would sort of get. But then it's not consistent like that way. So that was fantastic, too. That was just sort of, I had to keep my mind focused. That was the effect of that.
Yeah, I'm glad. Some people seem to really relish it. They say, you know, at first it's kind of hard to work their way into. But you do have to sort of go back and read a sentence over and over again. And that's kind of an effect, or maybe not over and over again, but at least another time. And that's an effect that I was hoping to have. I guess the effect that I wanted was we're all accustomed to being driven insane by the news now, right? I don't know if you're the same as me, but I'm looking at Twitter, you know, almost the entirety of the day, every day now, and got the cable news on in the background, and then, you know, reading newspapers and. It's sort of driven me insane, and I get into this sort of feverish state when I'm watching this all unfold, and, you know, my face gets kind of hot, and I get anxious, and so I was trying to replicate that feeling on the page for people, and it's supposed to be kind of uncomfortable reading, and you know, I think from what I hear, that seems to work for a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, it definitely is a sort of antidote to what I can't watch too much news, because if I do, I literally feel like my brain's going to explode.
Right.
And I don't have that kind of outlet. I need to hear the voice that you're expressing, because, and it is about the thing we were talking about before, I really don't feel, things are so absurdly out of control this is not just left versus right. This is this is a different situation. I mean, I grew up in the 50s, and so I got to watch Nixon and I got to watch all this other stuff.
Right.
This is not anything that's happened before. And for people not to, I'm keep waiting for that moment on the, on some national news program where the reader of the news just gets fed up and goes, this is like effing crazy.
I can't believe we haven't had more of that. And, you know, just to be clear from where I'm coming from my political perspective is, you know, hell world, this isn't a, something that just started when Trump came into office. This is about, all of the problems, you know, particularly of capitalism that
have
plagued us for a long time. But it is different now in that, you know, social media and you know, the fact that we're all constantly attached to our phones, you know, that's still, you know, like 10 years or whatever it's been, you know, the social media has been around longer than that, but it feels like it's only been 5, 7, 10 years that we're all constantly, you know, on it. And that has changed us in ways that I don't think that we've, you know, adequately understood yet.
The thing that's amazing to me is bold-faced lying in the face of facts, where people will just go, no, that's black, and when it's obviously white. And then people will say, no, that's white, and they'll still go, no, that's black.
Right.
And at that point, I don't even know where to go with that. I mean, it's like I have like, okay, so you're living in an alternative reality, but you still vote.
Right. And for me, I think I'm almost, I don't know, I'm almost madder at the centrist media than I am at the right for this, because, you know, Trump and the people who enable him, they're just like trying to get away with whatever they can by any means necessary.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, right now I'm looking up on my TV and I've got CNN is on, and I don't trust these people who are on here to adequately convey the import of some of this stuff to us anymore. You know, it's Trump is great for television. You know, it's great, been great for Fox News. It's been great for MSNBC. And I get the sense that there's, you know, the class of people that are, we trust to bring us the news, that fancy New York Times reporters and the TV commentators, their lives aren't going to be affected that much no matter what happens. You know, you get to a certain point of wealth and class that you know, it all becomes sort of a game to you that you can kind of track like you're announcing a football game.
The other thing is I don't trust people who can't seem outraged, you know, when there's an obvious outrage and that you can't just go, this is crazy. You
know, that's something that's sort of, you know, I mentioned that I've written for, you know, lots of legacy media publications over the years. And I sort of have pretty much always either, you know, gotten fired or had to quit, or, you know, eventually I gets to a point for no matter where I end up working, where I cannot, like the ways that you're supposed to, you know, I touched on this, but the ways that you're supposed to cover news, I just can't pretend to be in the dispassionate center anymore. And I don't understand why these, well, I guess people just want to keep their jobs. That's why they don't. When there's like a press conference with Trump and he's lying and lying, I don't understand how these reporters all sit there and just like, Mr. President, sir, Mr. President, they still showing him this respect. Like, I don't understand why they don't just stand up and say,
I'm waiting for that moment because I have to believe it's coming. Or somebody goes, that's just a crazy lie, so stop it. You know?
Right. And what is it? Like, we all act like we work for him. He works for us. And it doesn't matter if it's Trump or whoever, you know. I don't understand this deference that we pay to the people that we elect to work for us. It's crazy.
And for benefit of listeners, now you get a sense of why you need to pick up Welcome to Hell World, because the essays are about what we're talking about. A couple of things, Luke, there's several issues that go throughout the book, and obviously politics is one of them. Healthcare is another an amazing issue. And one of the things I love about this collection is you do several interviews. A number of interviews throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one where there was a whole story about people who had to refuse the ambulance because they couldn't afford it.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that just, just saying that sentence alone.
I know.
That's pretty much, if, you know, a lot of times I try to think about the most succinct summary of what Hellworld is, and I guess I didn't take the ambulance to the emergency room because I was worried I couldn't afford it, is a pretty good, as good a summary as we're going to get. Yeah, but that one, I mean, and that's not that even that uncommon of a thing because, you know, you have to make this, you have to weigh this decision as you're, let's say you broke your arm or something, right? You're not going to die immediately, but you're in a lot of agony. These people who are like, I can't afford to get the $1,000, $2,000 ambulance bill that it might take, you know, so I'm going to drive myself to the emergency room or take an Uber or something like that. And that sort of stuff is just the worst indictment of our healthcare system that I can imagine. And that, or on top of that, there's the story in there about how we all have to do GoFundMes now for our.
That's right. That's right.
Bill, you
know? That every time I see that, it's painful.
Yeah, it's really sad. And you know, the twist of it is, and what I like to say about Hellworld is, like, it's not just cruel things happening. There's always like a sort of ironic twist to it. Like, you can't just go online now and be like, oh, I'm going to die, can you give me $5? You have to do it in, like, a charismatic,
right,
potentially viral way. And that's, like, it's the additional indignity we're putting on people. Like, they don't just, you know, they're going to, people who are going to get their cancer treatment, they should not have to be thinking about, like, oh, did I get enough retweets on my cancer picture?
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is journalist and writer Luke O'Neill, and we're talking about his book. It's a really great collection of his pieces, Welcome to Hell World, Dispatches from the American Dystopia. Some of these pieces were just really, really kicked me in the gut. But I also want to mention, there are some pieces that are just totally unique, and I am so glad you wrote them. And the weirdest one is the interview with the guy who bowled the perfect game on 9/11.
Right.
And there's something so weird and wild about that. Tell me that story, because you actually had to track this guy down after years.
Right. I forget when it started, maybe a year ago. Somebody on Twitter was at a bowling alley in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And, you know, a lot of bowling alleys, they put up your picture if you bowl a perfect game. And they just saw this guy's photo and, you know, it was like, bowled a perfect game. And it just said the date, you know, and it was 9/11, 2001. And, you know, that photo sort of went a little bit viral on Twitter. And the whole time I thought, I kept seeing it pop back. I was like, I want to talk to this guy. But it was really hard to track him down. And after some sleuthing, you know, calling the bowling alley and calling everyone I knew who lived out in that part of Massachusetts to see if they ever heard this guy's name, I finally found his number, and I just called up the house. And it was funny. It was almost like you would think that somebody calling up would be like, yeah, I heard you bowled a perfect game, like, 18 years ago or whatever. You would think that they'd be like, what is this about? But no, the guy was just like, it's almost as if he was waiting his entire life for someone to call and ask him.
And it's a great conversation. I don't want to spoil the conversation because it was touching. It was really an interesting conversation. And for me, the best part was at the end. Have you seen any bowling movies?
Right.
And
right.
He'd never seen a bowling movie.
No, he hadn't even seen The Big Lebowski. I thought that was.
I thought that was the great way to end it. Well, you should see it.
Yeah. Right.
Oh my God.
I mean, and it's not, you know, the thing I liked about that, but, and I hope this comes through, but I also talked to this guy about, you know, he worked in a paper
That's
mill
right.
his whole life, and all the paper mills in that part of Massachusetts have been closed down over the years, you know, so even when I do a goofy interview, I still
That's
want
right.
to work in some aspect of you know, of how capitalism is you know, degrading our lives.
You bear a lot of your own soul in these essays, both your health issues. And your mental health issues. There's a really painful essay about your own sexual assault,
right?
And a lot of it is about how, you know, kids of a certain age just like sort of mock it when it happened, It was like, talk about that. That was that tough to write about? I mean, I would find it, because you can't even remember it.
It was in a way because, I mean, I'm, like you say, a lot of the stuff, I write a lot about my own mental health and physical health issues, so I'm somewhat accustomed to it by now, but that one, obviously, that presents a different layer of stuff. And the thing that I thought was interesting about that was that it didn't occur to me until, like, 2 years ago or whenever, maybe when the Brett Kavanaugh stuff was happening, whenever that was, and seeing so many more women come out and talk about how, you know, terrifying this was for them. And I was like, wait a minute, we always talked about, my friends and I always talked about that sort of happening to me as if it was a joke. And that sort of, I know, that kind of clicked something for me in my brain. Like, why did we process that? You know, my event wasn't anywhere near as serious as a lot of people's are or anything like that.
I don't know if I'd minimize it, Luke. I think it was pretty screwed up.
Well, yeah, well, that's another aspect of it. You know, just the way these things can be really confusing for people. But you know, men, we did, you know, certainly in the 90s when I was growing up, we didn't talk about this sort of stuff. And it was, you know, the only way you really had to deal with it was to sort of make a joke out of it, like, you know, like young men do for basically everything in their lives.
There's obviously a number of bete noirs in your life, as has been in a lot of people's lives. The Sacklers are another group of fine people that you talk about a lot in these essays.
Yeah.
I want to give you time to talk about the Sacklers, because I happen to find that really heinous.
Well, they're the family behind Purdue Pharma, who were the makers of OxyContin. And over the past year or two, we've seen as states and cities around the country have started to bring lawsuits against them, we've started to see some of the internal communications from the family. And it basically is as bad as you could imagine it. It's basically just pushing profit no matter what the cost, these highly addictive medications. And you know, the opioid crisis is one of the most serious issues affecting the country right now. With so many people dying, the number escapes me at the moment, but it's getting up there towards one of the, you know, leading causes of accidental death. And it's just sort of sickening how this billionaire family is just sort of voraciously devouring people for their own profit. And meanwhile, they're, you know, buying up the naming rights to museums and hospitals and universities all around the country in order to launder their name, as if they're, you know, done some great contribution for society. And, you know, the fact that people like that can still show their faces in public is disgusting to me.
One of the great things I like about your essays is your title of your essays, because what happens is you read the title and you go, I have no idea what this is going to be about.
Right.
And then it sort of becomes a punchline later in the essay. And I love that. One of my favorite names is, we've already established that now we're just haggling over the price. And first of all, that is, you know, I'd forgotten about that incident. And that was a horrible thing that happened with Colin Whitehead's novel, The Underground Railroad. And there was a 10th grade MCAS. You can explain it. I'd love to know whose brainchild this was.
Yeah, well, it was this year for the MCAS, the tests that students take in Massachusetts, the competency tests or whatever the word is. And they asked students to read a passage from Whitehead's novel, which is amazing, and you know, it's about slavery, and react from the perspective of this, you know, clearly racist woman who turned the slaves over to the slave catchers. And it, you know, it's just sort of stunning. Like, what is the point of trying to get inside that person's head, you know? And then I guess the turn of the essay is that, well, maybe it is a good exercise, because we've got a lot of people right now in this country who you know, aren't that far off from the mentality of the, of those the people during the era of slavery.
Well, you, there's an essay, a brilliant essay, right, where you get fascinated by these stories about how Fox News is breaking up families. And that, you know, they sort of need to go to some kind of like detox center in order to put the family together. And as you bring up, that stuff was probably there all along. And then you go, there was something about the Obama administration that caused family members to lose their mind. I wonder what that was.
Yeah, it's hard to say. The jury's still out.
Gee, I can't figure out what that was.
Right.
But
go ahead. Oh, I was going to say that one, that essay, you know, I collected a few dozen testimonials from people who just sort of had their relationship with their family ruined because, you know, one or more of them have sort of been sucked into this black hole of Fox News. And, you know, it's pretty tragic.
But it's like a cult. I mean, and it's becoming more and more obvious that it's really cultish.
No, it certainly is. And that, you know, gets back to the stuff we were talking about, this sort of land of no reality that a lot of people live in, you know. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see whether or not Fox News, who are, you know, they're pretty savvy business for whatever their faults. There's been, you know, somewhat a little bit of fractures in the relationship with Trump lately with the impeachment stuff. And I don't want to, you know, get optimistic or give them any too much credit, but it'd be interesting to see whether or not they cut bait at some point and they realize that it's a sinking ship they might be going down with. But, you know, I'm not holding out hope for that.
Luke, we could be talking about these essays for years, and people should just read them. Again, we're talking about Hellworld, but can people subscribe to Hellworld?
Sure. Yep. And so, the book, collects whatever it was, 75 or so of them, but I put out two or three new ones every week. On my newsletter, it's luke.substack.com, and Substack is this sort of new newsletter startup, and they've got tons of great journalists and authors and scientists and podcasters, and you can go or you can find me on Twitter at lukeoneal47, and there is certainly no shortage of material to keep up on. And
that's the tragic thing.
I know. I'd love to go out of business.
I know, but thank God you're not. My guest tonight has been journalist and writer Luke O'Neill, and we've been talking about this amazing collection of his pieces, Welcome to Hellworld, Dispatches from the American Dystopia. Luke, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. Nice talking to you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.